Sometimes I really think the whole world is going nuts. You know, just when I think that maybe man is rising out of the slime of his inhumanity toward man, something comes up that totally pushes me back and makes me realize that it is extremely important that we not only proclaim our particular vitalistic philosophy, but that we actively proclaim it, that we go out of our way to proclaim it. I was listening to a news broadcast the other day on, it was a discussion actually, and in the discussion was brought up a very, very interesting fact. And what it had to do with was cloning. Now I know, you know, we've talked about cloning before and it's been in the papers and people have been interested in cloning and you know, following it. But what this was a little bit different. It seems that the British government has now given permission to scientists in Britain to attempt to clone human embryos, to grow human beings. But it would be of the individual itself. In other words, you would go and they would take your cell and your genetic makeup and then they would clone this. Now, that's bad enough. But the reason that they would do this is the thing that really got to me. The reason they would do this would be so that you would have a way of being able to harvest organs that you might need for yourself in the future. Now, I want to say that again because, you know, it took me twice to listen to this. The reason they want to do this, they want to grow another you, is so that you can take the organs from the other you that they grow to use in the future. In other words, if you need a kidney, you would take the kidney from your clone. If you needed a liver, you'd take the liver. If you needed whatever, bone transplant, you could take bone. I mean, have you ever in your life heard anything so horrible from a human point of view as growing humans as a storehouse for personal use in the transplantation of organs or body parts? I mean, this reduces man down to nothing more than a biological entity without any redeeming features at all. You know, it's horrible. I mean, the thing I keep going back to is we hung people at the end of the Second World War after the Nuremberg trials. We hung them for even thinking about things like this and doing experiments that were much less than this. And now our societies are now doing the exact same thing that we condemned people to death for 50 and 60 years ago. This is insane. I read another article. There was an article in the science section of the New York Times on Tuesday. And it was a article proclaiming victory in the prevention of breast cancer by the removing of healthy breasts. In other words, what they are saying is that they have taken high-risk females, removed their healthy breasts, and because they removed their healthy breasts, they did not develop breast cancers. And we're proclaiming this as a victory, that it was a program that basically was very successful. And they were, in their madness, proclaiming this as a victory. The butchery and disfigurement and just immoral evasion of these women to remove an organ so that it would not get sick is a victory? This is what the so-called scientists of our day. This is science now. This is what those people in chiropractic want us to be able to identify with. This is the people that they want to approve us. These people who want to remove breasts, healthy breasts, and these people who want to develop clones of individuals so that the individual could harvest organs from them, steal organs from them to use for themselves. This cannibalization of humanity. And these are the people that we are begging to have accept us. This is total madness. This is total insanity. It once and for all defines in a very, very concrete manner what these people think human beings are. To them, human beings are nothing more than bodies that happen to contain minds. And I'm not even sure that they are positive of the fact that they have a mind. They couldn't possibly think that some, because they had a mind, how could you steal organs from it? I mean, but this is the way they look at us. They look at people as being bodies made up of parts. And that these parts are interchangeable things and plug-ins and plug-outs and things that basically have no other significance than from a cellular biological importance. Period. Where's the spirit? Where's the soul? Where's the spirituality of this thing we call a human being? Is the human being so base that it can be treated like this? And what about our human beings? Human beings tolerate this now? You know, chiropractic is the number one profession dedicated to the well-being of humankind. And humankind is defined as being that entity on the earth that is made up of body, mind, and spirit. We have to stand on the highest mountain and say this. Because the other ones are saying that you're nothing more than a biological entity, a clump of cells that projects some kind of or follow some kind of physiological law, period. And this is nonsense. And we shouldn't even tolerate this. We shouldn't allow this. And if a professor in one of our schools said this, he should be censured for saying this. And this has nothing to do with free speech. This has to do with sanity. This has to do with the respect that we have. How can you expect people to have any respect for each other when they are nothing more than biological entities? You know, if anything pushes me to the point where I understand that the salvation of mankind more than ever depends on our particular philosophy, this is it. I can't understand how we in any way, shape, or form can stand by silently while so-called science makes these bizarre proclamations without challenge. There was an article in today's Times, in the science section of today's Times, that they have discovered a brand new super antibiotic that will soon be on the market that will kill all those super bacteria. Haven't learned a thing. They haven't learned that they created the super bacteria with the use of their antibiotics, so now they're going to use a super antibiotic, and as a result of that, they're going to create a super bacteria. They're going to make bacteria so strong that no other life form will be able to resist them. And this is science. This is the thing we're supposed to respect. This is the thing that we're supposed to be in awe of. Well, if this is what it is, I don't want anything to do with it. And I think we should stay as far away from it as we possibly can. Because this is just absolutely insanity. I think chiropractic should stand on its own feet. It shouldn't depend on anybody or anything for recognition or for validation. We are who we are. And we do what we do. And we do what we do because what we do works. Now, if you can't validate that scientifically, I could care less. I don't really care whether you can validate it scientifically or not, because I'm not sure the scientific principles that you would use to attempt to validate what we do are really accurate anyway, or really have anything to do with what we do. Because the particular position that science takes is purely mechanistic, and we are the opposite of mechanistic. We are vitalistic. Our thinking is not even parallel with mechanistic thinking. You cannot sit down and have a logical conversation with someone whose philosophy is mechanistic, because your thinking is totally different than a mechanistic person's thinking. As a result of that, your senses of reality are totally different. You would no more think of chopping off a breast to prevent a woman from getting breast cancer than you would standing on your head and whistling Dixie. Yet the other one would say, well, that's a perfectly logical thing because it makes perfectly good sense to me. If they don't have the breast, they can't get cancer. And that's only because they think in a mechanistic way and we think in a vitalistic way. And our argument has to be such that we are willing to defend this whole concept of vitalistic thinking. I shudder to think what's going to come next from these people. Because they're very close in their technology of being able to accomplish what they're talking about. They're very close to being able to clone things. Now, the problem with cloning up to now has been that the things that they have cloned have failed to stay alive. They stay alive for a short period of time, but then they die. They don't, for some reason, longevity is not one of the things that has been produced in the creatures that they have cloned. So there are other factors involved here. That are saying, basically, you can clone something, but nature at this particular point is not going to allow it to stay alive. And then if you have to say, if nature does not allow it to stay alive, there must be a very, very good reason why nature doesn't want it to stay alive. And what is the introduction of this new artificial life form that's being created, what the effect of this might have on society and on the living world, perhaps is so detrimental that nature says, it's got to go. It can't exist here. Now, science may figure out a way to short-circuit nature here to make nature work harder at being able to destroy these things that are being artificially created. But even the idea that they want to do this, that somebody sat down and had the idea that they would clone somebody and create their identical image so that the first individual could use the second individual as a storehouse for organs. The fact that somebody even thought of that as a rational thing is just beyond my comprehension. You know, chiropractic is basically so much bigger than what we think it is. Simply because the ideas proclaimed by chiropractic, the idea of universal intelligence, the idea of an innate intelligence, the idea of the fact that human beings are mind, body, and spirit, and that chiropractic can affect body, mind, and spirit. The idea that the individual can have a potential released inside of them that allows them to be the best they can be in the environment in which they live. The idea that you can change someone or allow someone to change by removing the interference from that part of them that enables them to be able to be aware of their place in the universe. The idea that we can even do this is such a revolutionary idea and is so liberating to the human race that it is essential that the human race become aware of this. Now, the human race is so hungry for this that they listen to all these people that write books that touch on what we do, but are still outside-in people rather than inside-out people. And even if they're outside-in people, the public is so hungry to hear something like this that they create gurus out of these people. And yet, we have not only the answer, but we have a methodology that enables us to materialize the answer in such a way that mankind benefits. I wish our national organizations would stand up and just proclaim, just say it, just put it in print what it is that we really are all about. I wish our national organizations would stand up and when somebody makes a stupid remark, like they want to clone human beings so that they can harvest organs for themselves, and stands up and says, this is ethically and morally wrong. And we as chiropractors say this is ethically and morally wrong. And when somebody says, we're going to cut your breast off so that you don't get cancer, they say that this is ethically and morally wrong. And when 150,000 people die in a hospital because of an adverse reaction to a medication, that we say, this is wrong. Why are we afraid to say it's wrong? What is it in our psyche that makes us so fearful to stand up and say it's wrong? It's wrong. I mean, we go around, the medics love to go around and talk about the fact that chiropractic adjustments produce strokes. And there is a minutia, a tiny minutia of evidence that in some instances this might have happened. And we now spend time and money and effort in defending ourselves from this. When the other side has hands that are so bloody and so dirty that instead of defending ourselves, we should look at them and say, you know, are your hands clean? Just like in the past, medical doctors now, and I have always held this position that they were so superior to anybody else on the face of the earth, you know. This indoctrination that they are the most superior beings, you know, eventually ended up with them being arrogant. And their arrogance is basically what people dislike. But the part about them understanding who they were and what their position in society was, they held themselves out as being the ultimate of healers, the ultimate of wisdom, the ultimate of intelligentsia. And chiropractors ran around with this enormous inferiority complex that when any of this group of superior intelligentsia said anything that was adverse about chiropractic, we hid under the covers and behind the rocks, And attempted feeble types of defense against what they said, instead of standing up and attacking back and saying, you know, how many people did you kill last year? As far as I know, we didn't kill anybody. Or what you're proclaiming is not only immoral, it's evil. It's unethical. It will produce nothing but chaos in society. But your handling of the type of chemical and biological substances that you now have put into society has created chaos in society. You've changed the environment. You've created in the environment now a particular organism that has become so strong that it is able to kill. Nature didn't do that. It is because of what you created with your anti-biological agents that you have introduced into society. You've disturbed the balance. And in disturbing the balance, you've created an environment now that is more adverse for human beings. This is the result of what you've done. This is the madness that you have proclaimed upon us. And this is the madness that exists even to this day. You can't pick up a periodical. You can't listen to a discussion on health without hearing this madness. And this madness being proclaimed as good science. It's time chiropractors stood up for who they are, who they absolutely are, and who they are the number one profession dedicated to the well-being of humankind, period. The number one profession dedicated to the well-being of humankind. And what we take care of is human beings. We don't take care of human beings' bodies by themselves. We take care of the entire human being, body, mind, and spirit, because the thing that we influence is the nervous system, and the nervous system is where the individual lives. The nervous system is the mechanism that runs the body. The nervous system is the mechanism through which the mind expresses itself. The nervous system is the mechanism that enables us to have a spirituality. And if interference exists in this mechanism, then you have changes in either body, mind, or spirit, or in all of body, mind, and spirit. And this individual now, in the environment in which he lives, cannot proclaim his humanness to its fullness and its potential. Not to say this, not to proclaim this, not to defend this. That is madness on our part. Just as the craziness that the other side proclaims is madness on their side. For us not to proclaim our philosophy at this time in history is madness on our part. I would still like to see a full page ad in the New York Times proclaiming what chiropractic truly is. And I'm not talking about some small specific part of chiropractic, like the fact that if someone gets adjusted, their backache goes away. I'm talking about what chiropractic is. What the entirety of it is. The fact that basically it enables the individual to express life to its fullest. It enables the innate intelligence of the individual to express balance so that this individual can live successfully in an ever-changing environment. To proclaim the fact that there must be in this universe a universal intelligence. And in each individual an innate intelligence. And that the expression of this innate intelligence utilizes a life force and enables this biological entity called mankind now to be able to express itself successfully in a physical, mental, and a spiritual way. Why not? Why can't we have a full page ad like that in the Times? What are we afraid of? You know, I'm coming more and more to the opinion that for those people who cannot get involved in this, for those people who are absolutely certain of the fact that chiropractic is nothing more than a mechanistic offshoot of physical medicine, for those chiropractors who believe that our job is merely to treat various ailments that are associated with the bony spine, I think basically those people should be separated from us. I think those of us who wish to be chiropractors should be chiropractors, and those of us who wish not to be chiropractors, but rather chiropractic physicians, and I know that even they don't even like the word chiropractic physician because they don't like the word chiropractic. Call them something else. Call them physiotrends, or call them spinal doctors, or it makes no difference to me. But basically, let them be separate. Let them do their thing, and then let us do our thing. Let us stand out. And you say, well, there aren't very many of us. I don't care. That's meaningless to me that there aren't very many of us, because I have seen over and over again in my lifetime a dedicated minority create enormous change. I've seen dedicated minorities stand up to a majority and intimidate the majority to the point where the minority gets its point across. If you get a strong, dedicated minority, and I believe most principal chiropractors would fall into this category of being a strong, strong, dedicated minority, we would start to change things. It was a small, dedicated minority went to Panama. It wasn't the majority of chiropractors went to Panama. It was a strong, dedicated minority went to Panama. And we changed an entire country. What we need is a strong, dedicated minority. What we need is people dedicated to chiropractic. Dedicated to chiropractic. Dedicated to the idea that their function in life is to remove interference from as many people as they possibly can, thus allowing society to become more proficient, to become better, to become more successful than it is now. The fact that, you make money in chiropractic only exists because you're in a capitalistic country. If you were in a non-capitalistic country, you wouldn't even think about making money in chiropractic because you just practice chiropractic and the state would take care of you, would supply your food and your clothing and your car and whatever it is. So the money part of chiropractic, right? And we're going to go into this on the other side of the tape. It's basically an afterthought that the idea of chiropractic, the mission of a chiropractor, is to remove interference. That's all you do. When you get up in the morning, you report for duty, you remove interference. That's what you think about. You think about removing interference. You think about taking care of people. You think about taking care of the folks. You think about removing interference. That's it. You don't think about anything else. And you become passionate about this. Because you understand the big picture. You don't only look at the small picture. Too many of us see chiropractic only in the view of our own particular offices. They see it in the view of our own particular practices, the people that we see, the people that we are directly involved with. They don't see it from the large picture. The fact that all of humanity is involved in chiropractic, that all of us together now make a change. And change occurs when all of us are in the right direction, all of us moving the same way, all of us with the same dedication, with the same passion, with the same concept of going forth to make life better for people. It's this kind of idea that will take chiropractic to the pinnacle, to take it where it belongs, to take it where it has to go. Not because we want it, but because it's necessary for society to be able to advance from the point it is now to where it should be. We are merely the servants involved in this. We are merely the vehicle through which chiropractic works. That's our function. We walk around with the ego saying, I. No, not. It's, we are just a vehicle. And I'm going to tell you that if we don't do it, and I've said this over and over again, if we don't do it, then innate will find someone else to do it. But it will be done. Biggest worry I have about us is that we're going to miss the wave. Because we're too timid to step out, because we're too hesitant to step out because of what people will think or what, quote, science will think or, oh my Lord. The only thing that's important here is what's right. What's the right thing to do? What's the moral thing to do? What's the ethical thing to do? The right, the moral, the ethical thing to do is to be able to deliver what we do to the masses. To be able to deliver what we do to as many people as possible. Paula Hegelin had a great idea. I was talking to her the other day. She said, you know, on the birthday of chiropractic in September, what we should do, all of us, is create a situation where all day long we do nothing but go out and adjust people like we did in Panama. Just adjust everybody. Maybe get 1,000 chiropractors or 2,000 chiropractors who maybe adjust 1,000 people that day. You say, well, it's only one. No. It's changing lives for that one day. And then everybody benefits. They get the benefit of being adjusted, and we get the benefit of realizing what we can do. We got to do it because it's the right thing to do. The ethical thing to do and the moral thing to do. One of the big problems that chiropractors have has to do with money. You know, in my travels and in the fact that I get to talk to a lot of chiropractors, I've come to the realization that it's a little different than when I went to chiropractic school, the type of people that go to school. When I went to chiropractic school, basically everybody that was in my class was there because they had either individually had a successful episode with chiropractic, or somebody very close to them had had a successful episode with chiropractic, and they made the decision that this is what they wanted to do. But then, I think around the 80s or so, people started to go to chiropractic school because they looked around and chiropractors were doing rather well financially. And they decided that this might be a really neat business to get into. Or, you know, you work, you know, maybe till you're 50 or so, put some money away, retire, and then go do what you really wanted to do. So a lot of people went to school with the idea that they were learning a business. Now, the problem with that is that if chiropractic is purely a business, then the purpose of the chiropractic practice would be to make as much money as you possibly could, simply because the idea of business is to make as much money as you possibly. People go into business in order to make money. So therefore, money becomes first and the service becomes second. And I think that all of us now have seen examples of that, or know at least of examples of that. And it's created a situation that I think is a little bit of a adverse reaction that we are having to ourselves. And I think that we should try to talk to these people or get them into Saturday Night Live or into philosophy sessions so that they can understand really why it is that they're practicing or why it is that they should be practicing anyway. And what really money has to do with the practice. Now the idea of money in the practice is always been a touchy thing. It's always been a hard thing for chiropractors to deal with. And I think that basically what we have to do is understand a little bit about what money is. Now money in itself is very interesting. Because quite frankly, money is a pure abstract idea. There really is no such thing as money. Money is just something that we agree upon. In other words, if you reach in your pocket and you take out a $20 bill, what is that? What it is a piece of paper that has been printed in a certain way, and we agree together to give it the name of $20 bill. But in reality, it's just a piece of paper. And the only reason it has any value at all is that we agree that it has value. If we didn't agree that it had value, it would have no value. For example, if the government decided tomorrow that only dollar bills printed in red ink would have value, then the $20 bill you have that's printed in gray and green ink wouldn't have any value. It's the same piece of paper that you had the day before, but now it doesn't have any value at all. So it by itself only represents agreement. It's what we agree that it has. Now the purpose of money is basically to make it convenient for us to exchange services and products. It's a coupon that represents service and products. That's all it does. Instead, if you go back to cave age, you know, caveman times, somebody along the line somewhere said to somebody, look, instead of us all going out hunting, right, Charlie, you make very good spear points. Why don't you stay back at the cave and make spear points, you know, for you and for me, and then I'll give you part of the meat that I get from the hunt so that you got something to eat, right? And I'll get good spear points. And it was the first exchange. And sooner or later, as society and time went on, it became more convenient instead of exchanging meat and this type of thing, we exchanged coupons. And these coupons became known as money. Now, primitive tribes may have used shells and beads and whatever rather than paper like we do, or you don't even have to go back that far. When I was younger, in the late 1940s, I went out west into Arizona and New Mexico. And in Arizona and New Mexico, they wouldn't even accept paper money. You had to pay them in silver. So you had to go to the bank, give them your paper money, they gave you silver dollars, and that's what you used. Now, you say, well, the paper money was legal tender. Yeah, but if they didn't agree that it was, then it had no value. See, because both people have to agree that it has value or it doesn't have value. Now, I was willing to agree that the silver had value, and they, of course, that's what they wanted was silver, so they absolutely agreed that it had value. So the exchange between us was in silver coins rather than in paper. It all comes down to agreement. We have to agree that it has value. Now, when the girl who collects the money in your office has to totally understand the idea about money. And one of the things she has to understand about money is what it is that you're charging for. What's the charge in your office for? And I go and I usually ask people this, what do you charge for? And it'll always be, well, the adjustment if they're principal people. If they're not, they'll give me a list of services and modalities and stuff that they charge money for. Well, let's forget that group. Let's just stay with the group that says adjustment. Do you charge for the adjustment? Of course you don't charge for the adjustment. There's no way you could charge for the adjustment. If you adjusted somebody and in removing interference from this individual's nervous system, you prevented this individual from suffering from some severe malady involving his heart in which his heart was going to stop and he would die. How much is that worth? Well, it's priceless. So to attempt to set a charge or a price on the adjustment, it can't be done. And in order to just get rid of all the frustration that goes in attempting to do it, I'll tell you right up front. Basically, that's not what chiropractors charge for. Chiropractors do not charge for the adjustment. Well, if they don't charge for the adjustment, what is it that they do charge for? Well, what chiropractors charge for is the ability to deliver the adjustment. The ability to be able to, for example, rent an office, that costs money. And if you want to put chairs in the office, that costs money. You want a rug on the floor, that costs money. You want a telephone, that costs money. You want a typewriter, that costs money. You want a computer, that costs money. You want a fax machine, that costs money. You want adjusting tables, that costs money. You want electric lights, that costs money. You want a filing cabinet, that costs money. You want paper, that costs money. You want a sign, that costs money. You want electricity to run the lights, that costs money. You want running water, that costs money. You want a sink, that costs money. You want a bathroom, that costs money. So the cost, the charge that is made to allow the chiropractor to deliver the service. That's what the charge is for. And the charge then is determined by what it costs the chiropractor to deliver the service. In other words, if you come from a very, very expensive area, your rents are very, very high, all the things that enable you to practice are very high, you're going to have to charge a fee that allows you to practice in that area. If you have a home office somewhere and the cost of running the office is very low, then of course you can charge less money. And of course the bottom line is always the smaller the nut, the more money you get to keep. So the charge is merely to enable the chiropractor to deliver the service. Now, he doesn't really need all this to deliver the service. I mean, if he wanted to, he could have just done a street corner someplace. But in the society in which we live, it's expected that he's going to have an office and he's going to have a place where people can go in order to get adjusted. So the CA should understand that that's what, when she collects a fee, that's what she's collecting the fee for. Part of the problem also that I found, and this is a very serious problem, is the fact that the CA did not think the doctor's service was worth what he was charging. And this is more prevalent than you think it is. Now, the idea of this basically means that the CA does not have a good working knowledge of what the chiropractor does, has no great idea of what it is that the chiropractor does. And as a result of that, now, thinks of the chiropractor doing something that she can see, which is putting her hands on somebody and pressing down on their back or whatever it is, and because she doesn't understand the concepts of innate and universal intelligence, does not understand what the chiropractor is doing in relationship to this individual's nervous system, has no concept of the expression of innate intelligence. Her idea is that it's not worth it what he's doing. Now, when the CA has this kind of a concept, it becomes very difficult for her to be able to collect money. Because first of all, most CAs are very, very honest people, and if they don't think what you're doing is worth what you're attempting to charge people, they may be able to collect the fee, but they're not going to be happy about collecting the fee, and they're not going to go out of their way to collect the fee. In fact, they're going to make excuses for not collecting the fee. I have gone into practices where I know one specifically, where a chiropractor was seeing almost 600 people a day and was on the verge of bankruptcy, simply because the CAs weren't collecting any money. And because they weren't collecting any money, he was not able to pay his bills. As a result of that, he was about to lose his ability to have a place to be able to deliver his adjustments. So, if your CAs have not been totally indoctrinated in what you do, I don't care how competent they are in the art of clerking, or in the art of accounting, or in the art of dealing with insurance companies, or in any of these things. If they do not totally, completely, and as close to 100% understand what it is that you do and why you do what you do, then your office will never, ever, ever be able to respond successfully, because they will bring you down. Now, how do you figure out whether or not your CA really, because I can hear now, well, my CA knows. Yeah, because my CA sat in for orientation. Yeah, my CA really knows. My CA understands what's going on. Yeah, my CA understands chiropractic. Okay, now, here's a little question. If your CA understands chiropractic, understands the value of chiropractic, understands the good that chiropractic does, understands the benefit to mankind that chiropractic has, is she the chief referrer of patients to your office? In other words, does she refer more patients to your office than anybody else? And if you can honestly say to me, yeah, my CA sends more patients to my office than anybody else does, I can say to you, congratulations, you have a CA that totally understands, is totally dedicated to what you're doing, right? And has a full and complete concept of what chiropractic is. But if you're sitting back now and saying, gee, you know, I don't even remember the last time my CA referred a patient to my office, then I have to say to you, are you really sure that she understands the importance of what you do? Because, see, I play a little game. When I talk to CAs, I play a little game. And the little game is I ask them, I make this statement about that they should be the chief referrers of patients. And I look at the blank expressions on their faces when I say this. And some of them feel a little uncomfortable about it, but you can see that it's not anything that they really thought about. But if I create a situation and I say, instead of working for a chiropractor, you worked for an oncologist, and this oncologist had discovered this brand new serum that would now reduce tumors in people. And then by reducing the tumors in people, would alleviate enormous amount of suffering in mankind and allow these people to live more productive lives and to live longer lives and to be able to be more successful in society because he was able to give them the serum. You know, who would you tell? And almost to a person, they say, well, we would tell everybody. Then my argument then to them is, well, if you understand chiropractic, then why aren't you telling everybody about chiropractic? And I say, and the reason is very obvious. The reason is that you don't believe as much in chiropractic as you do in the idea that the oncologist could develop a serum that could reduce tumors. And this, unfortunately, is the realization that we have to come to. RCAs are not as strong as we think they are. And to a great degree, it's not their fault. Number one, we have not brought them into the indoctrination that makes it easy for them to be able to respond the way we would like them to respond. But part B, you have to understand that they've spent the last 20 or 25 or 30 or 40 years, depending on how old they are, being totally indoctrinated in a medical way. In other words, they've been indoctrinated successfully medically, but we have not indoctrinated them successfully chiropractically. How many of you CAs go to Saturday Night Lives? Well, you know, it's Saturday night, they're not worried, da 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 da. Okay, now, if they are, as I like to say, on a mission with the chiropractor in order to attempt to make mankind better, why wouldn't they go to Saturday Night Live? You know, and I'll go back to my other argument, which is I always ask the girls, you know, do you work for a chiropractor or do you work with a chiropractor? Well, you know, they figure out very quickly that the answer that they want is they work with a chiropractor. Well, if you work with the chiropractor, then basically you have the same mission as the chiropractor. And if you have the same mission as the chiropractor, basically the idea is to get as many people checked and adjusted as you possibly can. And if you're going to do this, then why are you not taking the steps? Why are you not doing the things that would enable your belief system to be able to expand? And things that allow your belief system to be able to expand are things like Saturday Night Live. So why, when we have a Saturday Night Live, is the room not filled with CAs? And while I'm at that, when we have a Saturday Night Live, why is it not the room filled with your strongest patients? Why isn't it filled with these patients, basically, who you know are interested in chiropractic, are interested in spreading the word of chiropractic, are passionate about what we do? Why aren't these people invited every single month to Saturday Night Lives? What is it that we're afraid that they're going to hear? See, Saturday Night Live basically used to be an idea that was to educate the chiropractors, and it still is, and I agree that that's basically what it's one of its main purposes should be. But why do we stop there? Why isn't Saturday Night Live also a place where we indoctrinate CAs? Why isn't it also a place where we indoctrinate patients? Why isn't it a place where doctor, patient, and CA together can grow in the practice? See, if we really feel that what we do is beneficial to mankind and is a boon to mankind, then why aren't we taking all of the opportunities to be able to express this? Why do we separate ourselves from the patient? Why do we separate ourselves from the CA? Why are we in this box and the CA is in this box and the patient is this in box when in reality we're all in the same box? What is it about what we do now that enables us to be able to think that the practice is going to be better because we go to the Saturday Night Live when we are only one part of the practice? Because if you define the practice is what? The practice is everybody that's involved in it. Well, who's involved in it? Well, obviously the chiropractor. Who else? The CA. Who else? The patient. So basically you've got all these people involved in the practice, and we keep treating the practice like we're the practice. And we're not. We're only a part of the practice. So if your CA is not your chief referrer of patients, then I would suggest that you start talking to your CA. I suggest that you start inviting her. And if she's married, bring her husband. If she's got kids, bring her kids. What's wrong with kids learning about chiropractic at Saturday Night Live? God knows they're going to learn about aspirin on Saturday night if they're sitting home watching TV. God knows they're going to learn about all the other drugs that are on television sitting home watching television. Why shouldn't they learn about chiropractic on Saturday night at a Saturday Night Live? Or at a philosophy night or whatever it is that you call it in your area? You know, we go to Saturday Night Live and we say, oh, we had terrific Saturday Night Live. We had about 200 chiropractors there. That's great. That's terrific. Why didn't we have 1,000 people? Because if you had 200 chiropractors and each chiropractor brought at least one CA, now you got 400. And if you decided, each chiropractor decided that basically he would bring 5 patients. And you had 200. Now you've got almost 1,400 people. That around us. Yeah, and we're just talking about each chiropractor just bringing 5 people. Now, let's walk into Saturday Night Live. It's got 1,000 people in it. You think that if you have 1,000 people hearing the message now, and 1,000 people walking out now, and 1,000 people now getting excited, that you're getting a little more than maybe that you'll do with 200 chiropractors hearing the message? You see what I'm saying? We have to change the way we think about it. We have just absolutely been thinking so small about everything that has to do with chiropractic. We have put such blinders on our eyes. We have put such limitations on ourselves that we do not think in a successful way about chiropractic. Chiropractic has grown to the degree that we have allowed it to grow. See, nobody can control the growth of chiropractors. Chiropractors, because we have put the limitations on it. We've put the blinders on it. We have put the fences around it. Well, let's knock the fences down. Let's invite everybody in. There's nothing secret in a Saturday Night Live. It's philosophy. Why should the patient be exposed to philosophy? Say, well, do you teach your patient philosophy? Oh, we have an orientation, and I teach my patient's philosophy at the orientation. Well, you know, did you get exposed to philosophy once? Or did you go out of your way to go to DE and go out of your way to maybe go to the gathering and go out of your way to go to Saturday Night Live and whatever, whatever? Or did you just go in your career once? And then we expect these patients to be dynamos because they went once. Well, my CA sat into an orientation once. The stuff's available. The stuff is available. Alone in Florida, there's a Saturday Night Live in Miami. There's Saturday Night Live in Tampa. There's Saturday Night Live now up in the Panhandle. There's Saturday Night Live around Daytona. The Saturday Night Live in Jacksonville. And there may be more. Those are the ones that I'm just familiar with. But there's chiropractors out there. Now, I've been to most of these Saturday Night Lives. And with the exception of maybe the one in Miami, and that to a great degree too, is mostly Paula. Paula brings her patients to Saturday Night Live. But if every chiropractor brought 5 patients to Saturday Night, I mean, it would be enormous. It would be enormous. And just think of what would happen. Just think of these people going home and talking to other people on Sunday about what they did on Saturday night. I went to the Saturday Night Live with the chiropractors, and you know what they talked about? They talked about and spreading the word this way, putting the message out this way. Because quite frankly, how many chiropractors on Sunday talk to their neighbors and say, you know where I was last night? I was to a chiropractic meeting called Saturday Night Live, and this is what the speaker talked about. You know, I'm not saying that nobody does it, but I'll be relatively certain that very few of us do it. We have to knock the fences down. We have to stop this restriction that we've put on the growth of chiropractic. We have to eliminate it. First of all, I talked on the other side that we're going to become a very strong, powerful, dedicated minority. As chiropractors, we will become a strong, dedicated minority. But once we bring our patients in, we are no longer a small, dedicated minority. Now we are an army. Now we're an army of dedicated people. Now we're a force to be reckoned with. You see? This is why I wish all chiropractors thought the way we did, but I know they don't. And I know a bunch of chiropractors want to get as far away from us as they possibly can. And if that's the case, let there be a separation. Let them go their way. I'll take our group. I'll take our group, and I'll take our group, and I'll take the patients from our group, and we all come together. We got an army. And our army will be more powerful than almost any other army marching, because basically we have a purpose. We have a dynamic essential. We have a lasting purpose. And if you have a purpose, you have energy, you have dynamics, you have power. And the only one who have prevented this from occurring is us. Rip the blinders off. Just rip them off yourself and knock the fences down. And just go forward. Reckless abandonment. Understand who you are. Understand where your power comes from. Understand above, down, inside out. Understand what your importance to the world is. Understand what you can do, what you have the ability to do, the changes that you have the ability to make in society. And when you go to knock the fence down, you realize that the fence has been nothing more than just smoke. It never was there in the first place. It was all in your mind. Somebody planted it in your mind and you bought it and you believed it. And you confined yourself to this little tiny space, squeezed in, barely being able to breathe. And just burst it out now. And go forward. Just move out. There's an army going to march. There's an army getting ready to be formed. There's an army ready. All they're waiting for. All they're waiting for is the marching orders. That's all. And that great army is the public that we take care of. And they're waiting for marching. That's all they're waiting for. Once they understand, once you give them a purpose, then the army will move. And the one thing chiropractic has, if nothing else, is a purpose. An absolute purpose. One that is so valuable that I shudder to think of what our responsibilities or what will be held against us if we do not perform what we're supposed to perform. If the public knew what we knew, I think their first response would be anger for us not telling them before. So we've got to pick up where we are now. We've got to pick up our armor. We've got to pick up the sword. We've got to pick up our staff. We have to just step out forward and move. There is no obstacle that is large enough to stop us. None. Makes no difference. The government's not big enough. The medics aren't big enough. There is nothing big enough. Because if you move with the truth slices through like a hot knife through butter. The only thing that can possibly hold us back is fear. And the best way to overcome fear is by action. Step up. Be counted. Step over the line. Report for duty. Know who you are. and then proclaim the truth. The innate in me blesses the innate in you. Peace.